Less than 4 minutes had passed as Bob Hearns raced along the trail toward Jake Coke and the dog in the distance.
How bad is it?
Real bad. Close quarters like that. Should have dismounted right away.
Think he had any idea what he was dealing with, that Captain?
If he didn't, he does now.
What about Kate?
Kate? Hell, who knows?
Yeah! They kicked the horses back toward the inn, Buster loping along in their wake. Out in front of the inn, Rance Mecklenburg walked forward and pointed his pistol down at the wounded soldier.
I believe you're the one who did this to me, ain't you?
Mecklenburg raised his cupped hand from the flowing blood in his thigh, looking down at the dying soldier's face.
Misericordia! Por favor!
Yeah, I thought you was him.
J.T. Priest stepped out through the arched doorway, with Kate still clamped to his chest. He looked around through the low drift of gun smoke.
Who's up?
I'm up.
Bo Romans rose to his feet and dusted off his trouser leg.
Me too.
Tommy Kendall came walking over. Lewis Pryor only nodded at Priest as he finished loading his pistol and shoved it down into his holster.
Hearns, are you still up?
When Tommy heard no reply, he looked around once more, then shook his head.
Can't win them all, Hearns.
Joe Cherry came limping in from behind a bullet-ridden rain barrel. A streak of blood showed through the bandana he tied around the grays on his right leg.
Woo-hoo! That weren't so bad, now was it?
Denton Howell stepped in and shoved Joe Cherry to one side.
Shut up, Joe. We've got men dead here.
J.T. Priest looked across at the carnage. Dead horses, dead soldiers, and at the faces of the gunmen rising up like creatures from the netherworld. Dean Spence and Harry Turpin moved in from the right along the stone path. Other faces came forward. Big Joe Macon, Pete Lambertus, and Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins stepped over from the left, Roundhouse Eddie holding his wounded arm.
Oh, damn, they blew Earl's face clean off.
Mac, send somebody over for the horses.
You got it, boss. Hey, we better make tracks out of here. Once word gets back to the Federales, this place is gonna look like the Alamo.
J.T. Priest walked over and started to pick up the sawed-off rifle from beneath Captain Lima's body. But seeing all the blood puddled around the captain, he turned and walked away, dragging Kate behind him.
See all the trouble you caused here, Kate? All this just because you had to have a little fling with that cockeyed Jake Coke. I hope you're damn well satisfied. That poor captain might have been a family man.
Oh, you haven't seen trouble yet, you rotten bastard!
Bob Hearns and Jake Coke stopped their horses at the edge of the trail out front of La Rosa Negra and looked to the south, where a tall wake of the rider's dust stood slantwise and drifting on the air.
Where is this Diablo Canyon?
I don't know, and it doesn't matter anyway. Diablo Canyon is not where they're headed. If it was, Priest wouldn't have mentioned it.
You're right, Jake. Where you figure their hideout is, then? Nobody's ever found it that I know of. If they did, they'd never live to tell about it.
Maybe nobody's ever been this close on their trail before. We'll be able to track them from here.
They stepped their horses over in the yard, near the stone walk where the dead from both sides lay together now, peaceful in the Mexican sun.
Nothing we can do here. We'd just as well get on their tracks.
Give them a few more minutes. Let them think nobody's behind them. If Priest is smart, he'll have someone drop back and cover their trail.
Yeah. Coke swung down from his saddle and walked around, looking for his rifle on the outside chance it would still be there. When he spotted the bloody rifle barrel sticking out from under the captain, He stepped over and reached down for it.
Bob, bring some water over here, quick! Give me a hand, the captain's still alive.
Bob Hearn snatched a canteen from his saddle horn, looking over in disbelief as Coke turned the captain over onto his back and propped him up against his knee.
Here.
Coke saw the captain's bloody hand inch toward a pistol lying in the dirt beside him. Coke reached down and pitched the gun away.
Now take it easy. We're not a part of that bunch, Captain. If we were, we wouldn't be here.
Hearns tipped a thin sip of water to the captain's lips.
The woman was lying to save me, Captain Lima. You were right. Those men are Los Pistoleros. They were about to kill me when you and your men showed up.
Coke picked up his sawed-off rifle, and without wiping it off, stuck it down into his long holster.
It is a good and powerful weapon.
I'm glad it was in your hands, Captain, and not theirs.
You two are Americano lawmen?
Yeah, Captain. I'm a U.S. federal deputy with Judge Parker's court at Fort Smith. Hearns here is a detective working for Alan Pinkerton. I know we have no authority here, but we'll get these men, Captain. You have my word.
See, your word.
Let's get him inside.
Hearns reached around and looped the captain's arm over his shoulder. At the far end of the building, Coke caught a glimpse of a straw sombrero and the tip of a shotgun barrel.
Don't shoot! Juan, if that's you, get over here! The captain needs your help!
Why should I trust you? Look what you have done to my place, to my son!
We weren't part of them, Juan! You've got to believe me, for the captain's sake!
Hearns and Coke carried the captain through the arched doorway of La Rosa Negra. As Coke and Hearns laid Captain Lima on the bar top, Juan Herrera and his wife slipped in warily through the doorway. The shotgun in Juan's hand stayed poised toward him.
Ma'am, can you get us bandages and hot water? You gotta stop this bleeding.
Seeing that the two men really were trying to assist the captain, the woman hurried away toward the rear of the dining room. In a moment, she returned with strips of white tablecloth hanging over her forearm. She moved in between Coke and Hearns.
Here, let me do this.
She loosened the dirty, blood-soaked bandana Hearns had used as a tourniquet and replaced it with a clean strip of cloth. Coke and Hearns stepped back and gave her room to work.
Señor Herrera, we are American lawmen. I know you think you have no reason to trust us. We're not even supposed to be on this side of the border. But we're out to bust up that gang and see to it those men face justice. There are some other men who will be coming through here most any time. They'll be looking for me and the woman. You tell them I have an ally now, a Pinkerton detective. Tell them we're on the trail and point them in our direction. Will you do that, por favor?
Juan Herrera only nodded, still wary, keeping his hands tight around the shotgun. Coke looked all around at the destruction and shook his head.
I'm sorry this misfortune befell you. I truly am.
Coke and Hearns left La Rosa Negra Posada and swung a few yards wide of Priest and his men's tracks leading northwest, keeping out of the settling dust still hanging in the hot air. Buster trotted alongside them. An hour had passed when the two men drew their horses up at a place where hoof prints gathered close and into single file and headed upward through a narrow crevice to a higher plateau.
He'll have left some men up in there.
Yeah, it's perfect for an ambush. What do you think, Buster?
The dog stepped forward in front of him and lifted his muzzle toward the upward trail. He looked back at Coke as if in anticipation.
Good boy. Take us up.
The dog slipped forward and to one side of the narrow crevice trail, climbing off to the left along a smaller crevice where he seemed to vanish out of sight. Coke drew his blood-stained rifle from his holster and began cleaning it with his gloved hand.
Now we give Buster a few minutes to scout the trail before we go up.
Bob Hearns only nodded his attention given to any sound or movement above him.
He works quiet, doesn't he?
All Catahoulans do. Good ones, anyway.
Coke judged the time as he finished cleaning and reloading his rifle. Beside him, Hearns did the same with two big Colt pistols. Jake slid his rifle back into his holster.
Time to go. As long as we don't see Buster, we'll know everything's all right. If he shows himself along the trail, we stop right there and find out why.
He's your dog. Lead the way.
They traveled slowly and up along meandering natural switchbacks through rock and sandy soil. Rocks facing on either side of them reached up as high as 50 feet in some stretches, then dropped all at once to ground level. In the dirt beneath them, they saw only horses' hoof prints. No sign of the dog's paw prints were visible as Buster made his way through smaller crevices and animal paths that no man on horseback would dare attempt. But when they did see the dog's paw prints lead down from what appeared to be a sheer rock ledge 10 feet above them, Coke stopped his dapple gray abruptly and backed it up a step. He drew his rifle and stepped down from his saddle. Hearns did the same without asking why. Following Coke, Hearns led his horse forward. A few feet ahead from where the trail turned sharply left, Buster slipped out from behind a spill of rock and stood with his muzzle lifted to the still air. Coke eased forward, ran his hand back along the dog's head.
Good boy. What's he got up there?
Just what we expected.
Coke backed away and stepped over behind the cover of an outcropping of rock. Buster moved back with him and lowered himself down in a small space between the horses.
Okay, here's the deal. There's probably only 2 men at the most up there in the rocks along the top edge. That's all Priest needed to leave behind. Once the firing starts, J.T. Priest and the rest of them will hear it up ahead. They'll break up and disappear on us.
An old Indian trick.
Yeah, and one that always works.
But not this time, thanks to Buster.
Coke reached down and slipped a knife from his boot well. He ran a thumb along the blade, then looked at Hearns with a grim expression.
You ever done this before?
No.
You can stay here and keep the horses quiet.
What you're asking is if I have the stomach for it. If the men are on both sides of the trail, while you get one, the other will have a chance to fire. So yes, I have the stomach for it. It's our only way.
Got a knife?
Hearns searched through his trouser pockets and came out with a small jackknife. He opened it and clutched it tight in his fist as if judging it.
This'll have to do.
Too risky.
Coke reached into his vest pocket, took out a rolled up length of rawhide and shook it loose. He wrapped each end around his hands and tested its strength.
Which one you want, this or the knife?
Hearns folded his pocket knife, put it away, and took the length of rawhide from Coke.
All the months I spent in that schoolhouse, who could imagine the two of us ever doing something like this?
I know. Stay here, Buster. Watch the horses.
They climbed the rock and earth on either side of the trail, hand over hand, until they both reached a thin ledge a few feet from the top. Coke caught one last glimpse of Bob Hearns as Hearns reached up, found a handhold, and lifted himself up and over. Once he saw Hearns was over the edge, Coke did the same. He moved out across a small stretch of flatter ground before circling wide, moving forward 50 feet. As he moved back toward the edge in a low crouch, he scanned back and forth until his eyes caught a glint of sunlight streak along a rifle barrel. Coke dropped down for a second, then rose up cautiously. This time, gazing out across the deep crevice, seeing the gunman Bo Romans on the other side. Coke saw no sign of Bob Hearns over there, but he didn't need to. He and Hearns had been moving at about the same pace, anticipating one another. each knowing they needed to strike at the same time. Coke dropped back down and inched forward on his belly, the big knife in his right hand. When he raised his head again, he could see, on his side, the rifleman's broad back and shoulders less than 10 feet from him.
Sorry, Big Joe.
Coke rose up onto his haunches like a mountain cat ready to pounce. Yet no sooner had he prepared to spring forward than Big Joe Macon jumped straight up.
Look out, behind you!
Big Joe's rifle snapped up against his shoulder, taking aim at Bob Hearns. But before Big Joe got the shot off, Coke came in fast. Across the crevice, Bob Hearns sank down onto his knees with Bo Roman's weight against his chest, the raw hide drawn deeper and tighter around Roman's throat. Roman's fingers scratched and dug at the raw hide, but found no way to stop it from doing its job. As Bob Hearns unwound the raw hide strip from Roman's throat, he looked across the open span of air and earth between them and watched Jake Coke stand up from the body on the rock edge and wipe the knife blade across Big Joe Macon's shirt. Jake Coke moved forward to the edge of the crevice and looked back and forth along it. Seeing no signs of other men lying in wait, he stood up, waved Bob Hearns down toward the horses, then turned and moved away quickly out of sight.
Jesus. I never want to do something like that again.
Moments later, they met at the horses.
You all right, Bob?
No, not really.
First time you ever had to use something like this?
Yeah, I never felt a man die against me that way.
Coke just stared at him, his eyes asking for more.
To be honest, I never even killed a man. I had to shoot a bank robber in Chicago last year, but only in the leg.
What were you gonna do back there then when J.T. Priest had my rifle in my belly? I saw you ready to draw.
I would have done whatever I had to do. But that up there, I never...
All right, just put it out of your mind, Bob. It might have been a little easier if you hadn't known the man, hadn't ridden with him. But that's not how it played. Just remind yourself that he'd have done the same to you without thinking twice.
I know. And that helps some.
You can turn back, Bob.
Nope. I'll stick around. Besides, it's done now. Can't be changed. I'm still on my job.
Then let's ride and think about it no more. I've got a feeling nobody's ever gotten this close to Los Pistoleros before. By the time they realize these two men aren't coming, we need to be in position to do some serious damage.
Both the horse he was riding and the spare horse on the rope behind him were badly blown by the time Quick Charlie Sims turned off the trail and onto the stone walk of La Rosa Negra Posada. Evening shadows stretched long across the dark stains of dried blood on the ground. From around the corner of the building, the old constable stepped out with a big Russian revolver cocked and aimed.
Raise your hands!
But Quick Charlie Sims didn't even look toward him. Instead, Sims winced at the sight of Lorenzo leaning against the wall.
Good God, Lorenzo, what happened to you?
It's all right, Raul. I know this man. He is a friend of my family. You'll know him as well.
Quick Charlie? Is this you? What are you doing here?
What's the matter, Raul? Can't I come to visit my old friends when I take an ocean? Been hearing about a new inn here. Juan always said he'd build a place of his own someday. I hope I'm not intruding.
Oh, of course not! You are always welcome here.
Raul holstered his pistol, and he and Lorenzo stepped forward as one.
But Charlie, mi amigo, this terrible thing has happened here today. Many people have died here.
I heard the shooting from a long way off. You folks all right?
See, they're both unarmed. They're with the captain of the Federales in Sonora. He is badly shot. Several of his soldiers are dead. This might be a dangerous time for a gringo. I mean, for an Americano like you to be traveling here.
I appreciate your concern, Lorenzo, but I feel welcome most places I go. It so happens I'm looking for the men who did all this. You think you can lend me a horse and point me in their direction?
You know these men?
Oh, yeah. I know them all right. Some of them, anyway.
Why are you looking for them?
Well, some things have changed since the last time I saw you or your folks, Lorenzo. I'm a U.S. Federal Deputy Marshal now.
Always you make a joke, even at a time like this.
No, it's no joke. I've been working for Judge Parker. Not that it means anything down here. But these men have taken a woman hostage, and I've come to get her back.
The woman? I saw her! She's with them against her will. You know this woman?
Yep. I know. She's the real reason I'm here. Now, what about that horse?
Of course. Oh, of course. You can have the horse. You can take my father's riding horse.
You sure? It might be a while before I bring it back.
See, I am sure my father would insist you take the horse if he were here.
Gracias.
And you will need a gun, for these men are all killers.
Raul reached for the horse pistol in his holster, but Sim stopped him.
I won't need it, Raul, but thanks. Lorenzo, did you happen to notice a man riding with them who had a strange look in his eyes?
See, they all have such a look.
Never mind. This man's name is Jake Koch. Carries a sawed-off rifle. Always has a black dog traveling with him.
I see the rifle, but no dog. This man is the one who stand up to the others. They were going to kill me, but he stood up and took the blame for the things they accused me of doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be Jake Koch, all right. Was he with them when they left?
No, the Federales took him to Sonora, but then the fight started and he must have gotten away. Him and another man came back. They asked my father to keep an eye out for the Americano lawmen. But we had no idea they were talking about you.
Well, now you know. There might be a couple of other lawmen coming this way. I need you to keep them here if you can.
How will I do that?
Tell them I'm bringing the man they want to them. I asked them to wait for me back at the border, but I figure they'll have gotten too restless by now and are headed this way.
See, I will tell them to wait here for you, but do you not want their help?
No. I want to shut this thing down with no more gunplay than necessary.
This woman, she is more than just someone you know, see?
Exactly. I'm doing my best to keep real calm here, Lorenzo, for her sake.
When Sims and Raul had finished saddling Juan Herrera's big chestnut Barb, Sims filled his canteen and accepted a bag of food Lorenzo had prepared for him. Before Sims swung up onto the saddle, Lorenzo looked across the darkening land.
Are you sure you do not want to wait until morning? You are welcome to stay here.
No, thanks, Lorenzo. I'll push on tonight. I'd like to reach the place they're going to as soon as possible.
You know where this place is?
No, but I've got a good idea. The closer I get to them, the better that idea will be.
But you will not catch up to this Jacob tonight. And even if you catch up to him, together you will not catch up to those men you are after.
We might know a shortcut.
A shortcut? How can you know a shortcut when you do not know where they go?
We call it odds and intuition. Once I know the direction they're headed in, it's not that hard to figure out where they're going.
Always he talks so strange, our friend Sims, eh? You think he will be safe?
See, he will be safe. He is always safe. But I have never seen him so worried. I wish he had taken my pistol with him. It is not good that he goes unarmed.
He did not say he was unarmed, only that he did not need your pistol.
But I did not see a pistol on his hip, or a rifle in his saddle scabbard.
See, I know.
In the waxing light of a three-quarter moon, Sims only followed the hoof prints out across the short stretch of flatland until he got his bearings and judged where the men were headed. A black outline of foothills loomed in the northwest, the prints in the sand leading in that direction. Yet this was not the direction he would take. Instead, Sims reined the chestnut Barb straight north, a trail that would be straighter, steeper, and more difficult. But once above the crest of a 3-mile climb, the land would even out. His trail northwest from there would be flat and less rocky for as much as 50 miles or more. Sim spun the horse, reining it high with the reins, getting a feel for the animal and its capabilities. Sims didn't stretch the horse out the mile and a half to the foothills, but rather held it back, giving it just enough of a workout to reach the upward trail, feeling loose and ready.
Take us up.
Sims let the horse move at its own pace as its hooves bit upward into the loose sand and dirt. For an hour, the horse pulled the ground back beneath them. When they had ascended the high crest where the flatland lay westward between the foothills and the beginning of the mountain lines, Sims heeled the barb forward at a walk until he felt it grow rested and nimble-hoofed once more. Then he tightened his hat down on his forehead, collected the horse quickly, and batted his boots to its side.
When I said Sonora, Quick Charlie Sims knew what I meant. Besides, I thought you said he wasn't coming, Kate.
Priest smiled and lifted the bottle of whiskey to his lips. He sat at a small wooden table inside the weathered wood and adobe shack built against the side of an upthrust of rock. Kate McCorkle lay on the floor, her wrists cuffed around a thick support column.
Why so quiet all of a sudden, dear Kate? Could it be you've just realized that I've caught on to how you and your grifter boyfriend work?
Light glowed from a miner's lantern in the center of the table, giving Priest's face a ghastly, drawn appearance. Outside, the men slept around the glow of a campfire, the light sheltered by the walls of the rock canyon surrounding them.
He'll come for you, Kate. And this time, when he and I meet, there won't be any talking. Just killing. He won't get the chance to work his fast-talking charm on anybody.
Look at you, JT. You poor, sick-minded fool. You act as if killing Charlie Sims is the only thing that matters in your life. Do you think that once he and I are dead, your problems will be over? What about Sullivan Hart? Do you think he'll forget all about you killing his father? Do you think Judge Parker will stand still for you and your attorneys making his court a laughingstock? Do you think that Jake Coke just threw up his hands and gave up?
I figure the Federales probably killed your friend Coke when they heard the shooting and came riding back to it.
Where in the world do you get these ideas, JT?
Because that's what I would have done if I were them. See, Charlie Sims is not the only one who can anticipate what goes on in the other person's mind and take advantage of it. I've dealt myself the upper hand here. I've outsmarted all of you. Judge Parker, Hart, Sims, all of you. It's too bad you won't live long enough to realize it. All those nights in jail, Kate, I had plenty of time to figure out what I did wrong the last time. I was too eager, moved too fast, and made too many mistakes. But not anymore. From now on, I play it calm and easy. I lay back like a spider and let all of you walk into my web.
A 1,000 yards away, in the thin light before dawn, Jake Coke and Bob Hearns lay atop an overhanging rock and looked down at the small circle of firelight in the canyon below. They had drunk tepid water from their canteens and ate the stiff, jerked beef that Hearns had been carrying in his saddlebags for a long time. Behind them stood their horses, still damp and winded from the long ride that had only ended after prowling the hillsides for the better part of the night before Hearns had spotted the campfire. Beyond the horses, Buster stood watch on the trail. Coke and Hearns tensed and listened closely for any sound coming out of the blackness of the rocks behind him.
He must have caught a wisp of cat on the air. I figure our best chance at getting Kate out of there alive is for you to lay back and cover me down there. I'll slip in at dawn, get her out, and make a run for it.
He'll have a guard watching her, Jake. You sure you're not letting your feeling forward get the best of your judgment?
No, I'm not, Bob. I made a mistake back at the inn. I admit it. But now my mind is clear. This is strictly business from here on. you've got any better plan, I need to hear it.
Nope. I have no better plan in mind.
I do.
Hearns and Coke spun toward the sound with their guns cocking.
Easy, gentlemen, easy. It's me, Sims. You don't want to fire a shot right now and give yourselves away.
Sims? How in the world?
Coke saw Sims step forward in the pale starlight, Buster at his side. Sims' hand resting near the dog's head, patting it. Coke stared at Buster in disbelief.
Oh, don't blame him. I have this real gift with animals.
He stooped down with Coke and Hearns and gazed at the light of the campfire and the glowing light in the small window.
Buster, you and I are going to have a long talk after this is over.
And you and I might have a talk about those feelings you seem to have developed for Miss Kate McCorkle.
Coke looked at Sims' shadowed face. Sims stood at ease, looking down into the canyon as if this whole situation had been waiting for his arrival. Quick Charlie moving in and taking control.
How long have you been standing back there listening, Sims?
Not long. I wouldn't have found you at all if it hadn't been for this dog. Who's your partner here?
This is Bob Hearns. He's with the Pinkertons. We go way back, me and Bob.
Pinkertons, huh? I once met Alan Pinkerton. Shot billiards with him.
Billiards? Mr. Pinkerton don't shoot billiards. He's no gambler.
You can say that again.
What's this better plan you have, Sims? Or were you just saying that for effect?
Sims looked back down at the glow of firelight.
Well, since you're both far better with the gun than I am, especially you with that rifle, it's better I slip in down there and get Kate. You two cover me. And once Kate and I are in the clear, you can get in there and collect whatever bounty those men are wearing. It's what you were after, right, Coke?
Yeah, that's right. We want the rewards. So now that you're here, you figure you'll just ease in and out, not raise a fuss, not make a sound. You'll be Kate McCorkle's saving angel.
She is her own woman, Coke. Where she goes after I get her out of there, or who she goes with, it's up to her. As far as me not raising a fuss down there, don't count on it. If I thought I was that good, I wouldn't have come here. I'd already have Kate out and gone by now and left you two sitting here with your guns in your hands.
You'll take the woman, and Bob and I get left to bear the brunt of the fight. It figures.
Kate's been with me a long time, Coke. For her sake, don't fool yourself. But if you want to do it different, tell me how, right now, before the sun comes up.
He's right, Jake. We gotta make a move here pretty quick.
Go on then, Sims. As soon as we see the two of you get out of sight, we'll come down and finish things.
There'll be more than the two of us, Coke. But whoever you see us ride out with, let us go.
What are you talking about, Sims? This is no time for your slick grifting ways. If you get down and cause her any harm, you've got the rest of your short life to outrun me.
Sims looked into Coke's eyes and saw that there was no way to explain what he was about to do. Jake Coke wouldn't go along with it if he knew. Sims stood up and stepped back from the edge.
Take the bounty rewards, Coke. It's all you've got coming.
Sims, are you armed?
Only with truth and righteousness.
As Sims slipped out of sight, Jake Coke and Bob Hearns stood up, ready to move down closer for a better fighting position.
He's too cocksure of himself to suit me.
That's not what I saw at all. He's not sure of anything right now. He's scared to death and playing this by ear.
Yeah, maybe. It's hard for me to tell anything about him. I think he realizes he played this thing wrong from the start, but doesn't want to admit it to himself. We should have come in full force, Hart, Roth, Sims, and any other deputies we could round up.
You really believe that, Jake?
I don't know what I believe right about now. Come on, let's take the bounties. Like he said, it's all we're gonna get.
As a silver-gray thread of sunlight painted the horizon, J.T. Priest stood up and pitched the empty bottle into the pile of other bottles and old debris from times past.
Mac, come in here.
What is it, boss?
Stay here. Keep an eye on her while I go relieve myself.
Why, boss? Hell, she ain't going nowhere.
Watch her anyway.
Priest swung his hat atop his head and walked out the door. Passing through the men who lay asleep around the campfire, Priest looked down at the face of R. Martin Swan, and he shook his head in disgust, as if actually feeling the scorn on Priest's face. Swan threw a forearm over his closed and sleeping eyes.
Another one bites the dust.
A rusty pistol lay in a worn-out leather holster across Swan's stomach. The sleeping man's free hand caressed the pistol chamber absently, his dream seeming to examine what dark possibilities lay within.
Just once I'd like to meet a man who's more than just an outlaw in the making.
Behind a dead fall of juniper, J.T. Priest relieved himself and then stood for a long moment before turning and taking his time going back to the shack. On his way back, he made no attempt to keep his footsteps light through the coarse, dry bracken at his feet. He stopped suddenly, but not seeming too surprised when he felt something hard pointed to the back of his head. He felt Sim's forearm sweep around his face, keeping him from calling out.
Not a sound, JT. Keep walking.
At the door, JT Priest stopped, even though Sims tried pressing him forward. Without struggling, Priest raised his hand to Sims' forearm and lowered it from his lips.
I doubt that's even a gun. Probably just your finger.
You want to bet your life on it, Priest? All you had to do was ride away. You were free, you poor fool. Now open the door and take what's coming to you.
I can take what's coming to me, Quick Charlie. Can you?
Priest lifted the wooden handle and opened the door slowly.
Because if you can take it, Sims, here it is.
In the middle of the dirt floor stood Kate McCorkle. Behind her was Rance Macklenburg, his pistol cocked and pointed up under her left breast.
Step up from behind him, Sims. You just lost this game.
Sims raised his gun in the air as Rance walked over to him. His hands felt up and down Quick Charlie Sims' sides, searching him. He pulled out a folded cloth bank bag from inside Sims' coat and stepped back, looking at it.
He's clean, boss.
Told you he'd come.
Priest grinned at Kate McCorkle and snatched the derringer from Sims' hand.
He even armed himself. A derringer of all things. Just to show he cares, I suppose.
Rance Macklenburg stood, glancing at the folded cloth bag in his hand, holding it by its top and letting it roll open.
Take a look at this, boss.
J.T. Priest snatched the bag from Macklenburg, his hand shaking in exhilaration.
Now go on and shoot him.
Right now?
Yes, right now, before he starts running his mouth.
Reaching down inside the bag, Priest drew up a flat-banded stack of dollar bills.
Jesus, boss. That must be $1,000 there.
Expense money.
Shut up, Sims.
Shoot him, Mac, like I told you to.
Priest turned the flat stack of money in his hand, looking it over good in the faint glow of the lantern light.
I'm sorry, Kate. I lost my head. I couldn't think straight knowing they had you hostage.
I mean it. Shut up, Sims.
Shoot him, Mac, damn it.
Priest ruffled the stack of money, noting the crispness of the bills, the paper band around it never having been slipped, never wrinkled.
I've seen this man work too many times. You ever let him start talking, he'll get you somehow, some way. Now shoot him.
Whatever you say, boss.
Oh, wait, Matt. Just one damn minute.
Priest stepped over in front of Sims, the stack of bills in his hand.
Expense money? From a miser like Judge Parker? Still in a federal mint band? How stupid do you think I am, Sims? Where'd you get this money? Don't try to lie.
Sims' eyes widened in fright, but he said nothing. Priest cocked the small derringer, swung an arm around, and pointed it at Kate McCorkle.
Make me ask you again. See if I don't put a bullet in her mouth.
JT, it's the truth. It's expense money from Judge Parker. He wanted you real bad. Gave me an open hand to hunt you down. Said if that wasn't enough, there was plenty more where that came
from. You're lying, Sims! Empty! Empty! You son of a bitch! You came here with an empty derringer? So help me God, Sims!
Priest jerked one of the pistols from his waist belt and cocked it quickly toward Kate McCorkle.
Bet me this one won't blow her head off. Now, one last time, where'd you get the money?
All right, JT. Hold it. I tell you, this time it's the truth.
It better be.
Boss, you're letting him talk.
I know it, Max. Shut up. This is different. He's done for and he knows it. Now spill it, Sims. Where'd it come from?
What's the use? You already know where it came from. Don't act like you don't, JT.
Oh, hear that, Mac? This grifter pecker would open that damn safe.
What? No, he didn't.
Oh, yes, he did, Mac. I know he can. I know he found it where we left it, and I'll bet you every dollar in my pocket he spun that baby and opened it wide.
Boss, you said a while ago not to listen to him, not to let him start talking. Or...
Mac, do I have to draw you a picture of what happened back there? That's why he came alone. That's why Hart and Roth aren't with him. He didn't want them to know. Sims cracked the safe.
I'm sorry, Kate. It would have been ours, yours and mine.
Now that's damn touching, but where'd you stash the money?
Well, it's back in the safe, of course. What better place to keep it? Nobody can open it. Except for me, that is.
Now you're lying again, Sims.
JT, you can shoot Kate, you can shoot us both. But there's nothing else I can tell you. The money's back in the safe, all $738,000 of it. Now maybe it was a mistake putting it back in there with all the lawmen, the outlaws, and the Apache wandering back and forth, but that's where I left it.
$700,000? What's the number, Sims? Mac, get a pencil and paper. Write this down.
Where the hell will I get a pencil?
The numbers? Oh, you mean the combination. Well, are you going to shoot us, JT?
That all depends, Sims. $700,000 is going to make up for a whole lot of hurt feelings between us.
Then what's our share going to be?
Your share? I just said I might not kill the two of you. What more could you want?
Boss, this whole deal is moving a little too fast. How do we know he's telling us the truth?
Because, Mac! Damn it! Do you think this snake would be trying to cut himself in for a share if it wasn't true? Now what's the combination, Sims?
Four right, seven left, six right, 10 left.
Yeah, better repeat that for me, Sims. I didn't quite catch all of it.
Five right, seven left, six left,
Ah, never mind, you're going with us. Mac, think you can gather some horses without waking the whole camp?
Well, you mean just the two of us? Sharing all the money with a two-way split?
You're catching on, Mac. Get three horses, keep these lovebirds riding double. And Mac, be sure and cut the rest of the horses loose. We'll scatter them on the way out.
Well, damn, boss. That'll leave everybody stuck here. What if the Federales come?
Mac, if we leave their horses, they'll follow us. They'll round the horses up before the day's over. Do you want to share that money with the whole damned world?
What about the two men standing guard, boss? What if they see us and try to stop us?
Mac, anything a man does that's worth anything involves a certain amount of sacrifice. I hate that, but it's the damn truth.
Oh, but still, boss, double-crossing our own men?
Listen to me. There are very few times where you can hear destiny calling out your name. Get that money first. Then we'll have the rest of our rich lives to feel bad about double-crossing somebody.
Kate and Sims stood silently, watching Rance Mecklenburg disappear through the open door into the first gray light of morning.
Nice touch about the horses. I wouldn't have thought of it. You must have learned a few things in jail, JT.
Shut up, Sims. This is none of your business. Shoot straight with me on this, and there's a slim chance I might let you and your girlfriend go free. Cross me, and there's not a doubt in the world I'll leave you both dead in the sand.
We won't cross you, you have my promise. But let me ask you one thing, JT. Just for old time's sake. Why are you going to split all that money with a fool like Rance Mecklenburg?
Bob Hearns caught the first glimpse of the three horses moving through a sparse line of juniper and mesquite clinging to the walls and the floor of the canyon. He and Jake Coke had climbed down and taken position 100 yards away from the adobe shack, ready to move in and start the fight.
There they go.
Looks like Priest and another man are riding with them.
What about Kate? Does she seem to be all right?
Yep, her and Sims are riding double.
Hearns looked through the lens a second longer and saw two more men on horseback come easing along the same path as Priest, Macklenburg, and their prisoners.
Oops. There goes two more men following them. Looks like Denton Howell and Joe Cherry.
What's Sims up to? Think he even knows the other two are following him?
Here, take these.
Hearns handed him the lens, but Coke turned him down.
This is no time to wonder what Quick Charlie Sims is up to now. We'll give them a few minutes to clear out of here. Then we make our play.
Hearns looked back through the lens for a moment.
Now here's something strange. The rest of the horses are scattering, making their way down a trail.
What? Let me see.
Jake Coke took the lens and looked through it.
Priest and Macklenburg are cutting out on the rest of the men. What do you suppose that's all about?
Beats me. I just hope nobody leaves who's got a bounty on their heads.
On the narrow trail through the coarse juniper and mesquite, Denton Howe held his horse at a slow walk, grabbing Joe Cherry's reins as Cherry tried stepping his horse around him.
Damn it, Joe, stay back. Don't let them see us.
Howe looked Joe Cherry up and down, seeing the wild, glassy look in his eyes and the leather bag still hanging around his neck.
Are you up to doing this?
Oh, hell yeah. I'm always up to making some money. If Priest thinks he's going to cut us out of this deal, he's got another thing coming.
Oh, he thinks it, sure enough. Never once did he mention the safe they found at Birdine Spread. Luckily, the Hubs brothers let it slip the other night while we were drinking. Priest is playing everybody for a fool. Yeah, look at those horses scattering up into the rocks. Think Priest gives a damn who he caused to get killed here?
Well, it ain't gonna be us.
They moved their horses slowly upward until they reached the long stretch of flat land. By that time, Priest and Macklenburg were 1,000 yards ahead. Macklenburg kept Sims' horse in front of him, forcing Sims along at a fast trot. Kate McCorkle clung to Sims' back, with her cuffed hand holding on to his waist.
I was beginning to wonder if you were ever going to show, Charlie. What safe is JT talking about?
It's a long story, Kate. Right now, all we gotta think about is getting as far from here as we can. Coke and a fellow named Hearns are back there getting ready to take down those pistoleros.
Jake got away from the Federales then. I'm glad to hear it.
So, Jake now. Is there anything you want to tell me about you and Jake?
He's a good man, Charlie. That's all you need to know. He looked out for me, and he treated me like a lady.
No talking up there!
Sims gazed forward into the gray of morning, healing the big chestnut barb along the steep trail. R. Martin Swan was the first man to rise up from his blanket near the low campfire. He rubbed his eyes with both hands and ran his fingers back through his dusty, tangled hair. It was purely by chance that his eyes caught sight of Bob Hearns moving into position 30 yards to the right in the cover of rocks and scrub juniper above the adobe shack. Catching Swan's glance and knowing he'd been seen, Hearns raised his rifle to his shoulder and aimed it. But before it could get off a shot, Swan dropped back down to the ground, jerked his blanket over his back, and scurried across the ground like a rat. Looking down at Swan, Pete Lambertus looked to Roundhouse Eddie Jenkins, who had just stood up beside him.
Look at the crazy lore! Think he's fooled with Cherry's powder so much it's caused his mind to slip a notch?
Hell, who knows? All I know is, if today ain't no better than yesterday, I'd just as soon lay back down and call it quits.
What? Eddie's shot!
Men scattered from around the campfire, guns springing up from holsters and rifle scabbards, saddles being snatched up from the ground for cover. Coke's first shot hit Lambertus high in the shoulder. Another one of Coke's shots nailed Philip Oates to the ground. Three of the men managed to spill through the door of the adobe shack and return fire from the window. Recognizing the sound of the sawed-off rifle, Shepard looked toward the rocky hillside.
Coke, is that you?
Are you mad at us for what Priest was going to do to you?
It's me. I'm not mad at nobody. I'm a U.S. Federal Deputy Marshal carrying out my duty.
Your duty? You're in Mexico, you damn fool!
Wouldn't matter to me if I were in Paris, France. We're taking down anything that looks, sounds, or smells like Los Pistoleros.
Hey, who's that with you, Coke?
At the edge of the clearing, Lewis Pryor and Tommy Kendall came sliding through the dirt up beside Pete Lambertus.
Those sons of bitches have left us stranded.
What are you talking about, Pryor?
Priest is gone, and so's our horses.
Priest took our horses?
Yeah, either took them or scattered them. Either way, all the horses are gone.
So it's Rance Mecklenburg, Denton Howe, and Cherry. We've been left jackpotted.
Where's the woman?
Where the hell do you think the woman is? They took her with them.
Damn, we're in for a long fight here. What got in a priest doing something like this? All he talked about was getting Los Pistoleros going full strength again.
I don't know what got into him, but something sure changed his direction. That double-crossing, low-down coyote.
Coke?
Little Bit Collier was in the door of the shack.
Me and Range are giving up. Throwing out our guns. We surrender.
If they do, I'll kill myself.
Sir, boys, there'll be no surrendering today. This is the end of a long, bad situation. Everybody lives or dies like what they are.
Oh, it ain't fair. We only just joined this bunch.
You should have given it more thought.
We'll have to get collecting and rush them while there's still enough of us.
Damn that Coke. I reckon it's once a lawman, always a lawman.
For this, all you said was any man can change.
Yeah, well, that was then. This is now.
We're gonna have to rush them. If we don't, they'll hold us out here till they either pick us off one at a time or else a bunch of federales hears all this gunfire and come running.
Lewis Pryor looked at Tommy Kendall, then at Lambertus.
We're game when you are.